This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Straight up with no chaser. You're in the sports bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
Welcome back to the sports bar. Danger and Battaglia still basking in the afterglow of Rory McIlroy winning the Masters yesterday in dramatic fashion. We welcome in our buddy, the host of Tee to Green in the Odyssey app, WGR in Buffalo and the Buffalo Sabres Radio Network. The pride of SUNY Brockport, it is Brian Koziol back in the sports bar. Brian, a roller coaster of a ride for Rory McIlroy and his supporters throughout the course of the weekend, but he gets that career grand slam. How are you today, bud?
I'm great. What a great final round. What a great Masters tournament it was over the course of 4 days. Super memorable. One of the best of my lifetime, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Brian, we all acknowledge recency bias, but like, if that wasn't the best Masters of all time, and you're also kind of a historian, what other ones would you say, okay, would be right up there with it?
Yes, the recency bias asking me today, you feel like, yes, that was incredible. It was exhausting. It was exhilarating. If you were rooting for Rory, the amount of mood swings you had during the course of that day yesterday was wild. Other thoughts on the other Masters, 2019.
Yeah.
Five-way tie for the lead, including Tiger Woods, with four holes to go. Pretty amazing. And the leaderboard of guys that were tied with Woods at 12 under at that point with four to go. You had Koepka, you had DJ, you had Molinari, you had Schauffele, you had Woods. You had five major winners, all with a chance to win. And then, of course, Tiger's the one that rises above them all. Like, you know, pretty special. I wasn't old enough to watch the 86 Jack Nicklaus one that, you know, everybody says is right there at the top. But I feel like a lot of comparisons have been made that the 2019 Tiger one, you know, it's his final one. He comes back and coming off of, for Tiger, injury and a long-term wait and or hiatus from winning majors. Same with Nicklaus. So 86 and 2019, I feel like were very, very similar. I know just watching highlights and, you know, hearing about other Masters, the 1975 one is one that I know a lot of people always bring up. Where Nicklaus and Weisskopf and Johnny Miller are all three of them going at it, and Nicklaus pulls it out at the end. I know a lot of people have said that that one is really good. I mean, the 97 Masters where Tiger wins by 12 and really stamps kind of his mark on, hey, golf world, like, I'm here, I've arrived, I've risen to the biggest stage here and won on the biggest stage in golf. Like, you know, that was kind of the coronation of Tiger and what his era was going to be all about. In terms of the competitiveness and the lead swings and the storylines that we're developing, I got to think that this year is maybe, you know, I think it's an easy argument for top three all time. It just had so many good layers. The fact that someone was going for the Grand Slam, the fact that it went to a playoff, the fact that you had a guy that was winning in DeChambeau early on that ultimately was even a non-factor in the end. You had Rose get into there. You had Obert get into there. And then, of course, the whole time, McIlroy up and down the yo-yo day of him. Terrible start, back into the lead. Looks like he's pulling away, makes a mistake. Here comes Justin Rose. Here comes Ludwig Obert. Now McIlroy's got it. Oh, wait, no, he doesn't. Oh, he's got it. Oh, no, he doesn't. Right. Like, it was incredible, those mood swings down the stretch. I mean, it's got to be right near the top.
And, Brian, I actually contend that the best golfer of the week was Justin Rose. I mean, at least the most consistent because of how up and down Rory's game was. It just felt like when Rory needed to make the miraculous shot time and time again through the course of the tournament, he pulled it off.
He did. I mean, I was on WGR this morning and somebody said, like, what was the shot of the day for McIlroy? And I spent 2 minutes describing about six shots. He was just, every time you felt like, okay, he needs a shot, he came through. I mean, the shot on 15 where he's kind of up against some tree area and he has to shape it around and get it on a two was pretty amazing, where it hooked all the way around and then he ended up missing the birdie. Missing the eagle, tapped in for birdie. Then on 17, where he's yelling it to go, 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 and then it lands perfectly, and he's able to make birdie there. And then the shot in the playoff. I mean, to be able to answer Rose there, that was really, really impressive. Rose does what he always does. If you are a Ryder Cup watcher, you know Justin Rose. Anytime there's that, like, medium to medium long length putt that you're sitting here saying, like, man, maybe he could make this, and he makes it every time, and he does that fist pump, and it's just like, okay, that's the guy. When you're rooting for USA against Europe, he always seems to be the guy that comes through and make that clutch putt. He did it on 18 yesterday. I mean, Rose has to be sitting there thinking, man, if round three just wasn't such a hiccup for me, he would have probably won easily. And now to have lost twice in a playoff, that's got to be pretty tough for him. I know maybe yesterday, because he came from so far back, there may have been a little thought from Rose of like, oh my goodness, like I can't believe I got to a playoff kind of thing. I wonder if he was closer, it would have been maybe a little bit more disappointing for him. And look, at Justin Rose has been around for a long time. He knows what McIlroy's win means. Super classy, not a surprise at all in terms of how he handled losing and understood what Rory's win meant for the golf landscape. I'm sure he, of course, you know, would have wanted to win that, and I'm sure he's disappointed that he didn't. But Rose didn't lose it, in my opinion. Rory won it. I mean, Rose played that last hole very good and gave himself a great opportunity to make a birdie. So, you know, I think what you're saying about Rose playing great, he was definitely the best golfer of the day on the course yesterday, for sure. He handled the final round pressure better than anybody.
Brian, I don't know if we've ever had also your Masters champion just kind of bottom out at some points that we're, okay, it's falling apart. Certainly everybody watching on one, you look at social media, oh, no, this isn't happening, and he gets it together. My question is about 13. Was that more of a, hey, I'm not executing the shot here, or was that just a reckless decision, in your opinion, what Rory did there?
Yeah, I wonder, I mean, ultimately, did he just mishit it? I mean, he said his strategy, because he had the lead of laying up and going for it with a wedge into the green. You wonder if maybe his lead wasn't what it was, if he hits driver and then, you know, long iron into the green and plays it like he normally would have, it would have been maybe a much better result. I mean, to double that hole that probably on average is less than, you know, on average guys are birdieing it or worst case parring, like that was a huge drop right there on a hole that you're thinking, okay, he's up big, you birdie here and you might be able to seal it and put it away, and he wasn't able to do it. In fact, he let the field back into it, obviously, at that point. You know, you get in those spots, there's nerves, you're thinking more conservatively, and all of a sudden maybe the shot just doesn't execute like you want. My thought would be, again, if I'm caddying, I am not Rory McIlroy, I'm nowhere at his skill level, but my thought would be, look, let me do what I do well, which is hit this. I played 13 great all week, hitting driver and hitting into the green. I know it's easy to say now because he missed that third shot and it went into the water, but I might have told him, hey, let's just play it like we've played it all week because we've played it great, and why change up the strategy now?
Brian, when we saw how Sunday was going to set up on Saturday evening, knowing that it was going to be Rory and Bryson in the final pairing, I think that was a big part of what made this a great Sunday as well. When you consider the history from last year in the U.S. Open and DeChambeau getting over on Rory, these two, the rivalry between these two, you know, whether it's DeChambeau trash-talking Rory or bringing up the U.S. Open to Rory not talking to DeChambeau, not saying a word to DeChambeau for the entirety of the round yesterday. I mean, talk a little bit about what I believe every sport is better when you have a good rivalry. And this, I think, is actually really, really good for golf long-term.
I agree. Yeah, there was very, very, if zero discussion between them. I didn't see once on television the two of them exchanging any sort of words Other than maybe, you know, about, hey, you need me to move my marker or something like that, golf related, but nothing in terms of any sort of conversation. Bryson afterwards said, you know, did you try to engage Rory? And he said, no, he didn't want to talk to me, kind of thing. So, and I don't really have a problem with Rory not wanting to talk to Bryson. I mean, what was the motto of Tiger Woods during majors? It was, you know, tunnel vision on. I'm not going to talk to anybody. I'm not going to let my guard down. If that's how Rory felt he had to play to stay focused, I'm totally fine with that. It doesn't mean you have to be a jerk to the other guy in order to make this a, quote, rivalry. But for him to sit there and not say anything and kind of just focus in on his game, that what he felt was his best strategy, I'm totally fine with it. You definitely have a layer of what happened last year at the U.S. Open. I know some people were upset Rory didn't stick around and congratulate Bryson afterwards. He just kind of got in his car and bailed afterwards, didn't talk to the media, didn't congratulate DeChambeau after it happened last year. You know, a little different scenario last year. They weren't playing together. This year, they were in the same group. So there was some opportunity maybe for them to have a little bit more of an exchange. But, yeah, I think it's good for golf. Every time we get two guys that we sit here and think, like, okay, can these two guys be the next guys that we can watch going forward? As a rivalry, and you know, one being an American, one being a European, there's that layer there too that I think enhances it a little. So I think, you know, these guys, Rory is, even though he's 35, it looks like he feels like he's been here forever. He's still relatively young in terms of possibly having great golf success. He could still be a stud on the tour for the next decade. And DeChambeau's not going to go away in my opinion, because he just won't let himself. He's always trying to figure out that next great way to make himself even better. So I can't see him going away. So we might see these two hooking up quite often in terms of playing in big-time tournaments and big-time events. It is too bad that it only happens four times a year that DeChambeau, because he's an entertainer, whether you hate him, whether you like him, whether you feel like, hey, you know, all his content creation is good for golf. He certainly, I think everybody would agree, he is exciting to watch for sure. And he's always got something interesting to say, which is really all we ever ask for anybody in any sport, is give us a reason to watch. And I think Bryson gives us that.
Brian Colsey is your host of Tee to Green. Brian, it's more of an observation than a question, but I always, gosh, when we first started these conversations years ago, it would always be the Tiger question and what do you think of Tiger's chances? Even though, and again, he won in 2019, and I always wondered, Brian, what this sport would look like post-Tiger, and here we kind of are, and Brian, I was always kind of worried, and I'm not worried whatsoever. Give me the next major as soon as possible here. This sport with these personalities pulling a lot of new fans in.
I agree. It's going to be nearly impossible, probably impossible, to duplicate what Tiger Woods brought in terms of eyeballs and a different set of demographics to watching golf. And they've gotten all those people there. But what I think now is you've got a younger generation of golf fans that are in. And whether it's Bryson and his YouTube channel, whether it's Rory and his emotional roller coaster up and down over the last decade here or so, if you've been following that, whether you're a person that has been interested in the LIV versus PGA Tour thing, there's so many different reasons to tune in. Or even if you just love the kind of, I'll even call it nonchalant, you know, Scottie Scheffler, yeah, I just show up and I'm great kind of mentality. There's that layer too. There's a lot of players that I think people can be excited about watching. The fact that I feel like golf now is in such an age where these players are understanding that the interaction with fans, interacting on social media, pushing out content, being available more to the media, doing all these TGL sort of things like that, that, hey, it doesn't have to be just the old guy at the country club that we're trying to tailor golf to be. It can be everybody, all different genders, all different ages, all different races. Like, I think a lot more people are locked in on it and realizing how much fun golf can be. So I feel like there's a storyline for everybody to kind of attach onto. So I agree with you. I think golf's in a good spot. Obviously, Tiger moves the needle unlike anybody else, but I don't see it going down to the point where we have to sit here and say, is golf in trouble because Tiger doesn't play regularly anymore?
Brian, along those lines, and this is less about the actual game and more about the presentation, because I think the Masters as a product is next level. It's outstanding. The way they deliver it every year to CBS and the way CBS executes it, the way it is so easily consumable with the limited commercial breaks and everything that goes into the production of the Masters. Are there lessons to be learned by the other majors? Can the other majors adopt anything that the Masters does? I know they're all in the business of making money, so the answer is probably no. But I just think that if all of the majors were presented in the same fashion as the Masters is, that golf would even be more widely accepted by the casual fan.
I think you make a great point. The best sports broadcast of the year in any sport is the Masters. It is a huge piece because of that limited commercial interruption. But I also just think the Augusta National members and those that help run this tournament, they have a big hand in essentially saying, look, this is how we want it presented on TV. This is how we want it presented on radio. This is how we want it presented online. This is what can be put out. This is what can't be put out. And I think that it sets a whole different tone. It's amazing how many golfers, even just this past week, commented on the fan engagement, even on the course, because of the no phone policy. I wonder if you'll see other courses or other events maybe try that at one point, or maybe some sort of limited usage of phones. I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they feel like there's money to be made with apps and scoring and buying of merchandise that they don't want to go down that road. The Masters clearly doesn't care. They're like, look, we want to put across the best event possible. We're willing to throw away millions of dollars in terms of advertising and sponsorship. I mean, you go to any other PGA Tour event, there's signage and corporate sponsorships and things, sponsor labels everywhere. You don't see a lick of it at the Masters, which is what I think maybe is alluring to people. It's kind of like, hey, you're loving the sport for the sport, and there's no other distractions at all. I think if broadcasting in itself could grab some of that, I think it would be so much better. I mean, the exact opposite is what we just watched. If you watched March Madness in the NCAA tournament, literally every whistle is a commercial. So it is the exact opposite, and it's tough to watch at times, whereas there's constant action with the Masters. And also, too, I mean, for me being a broadcaster, I appreciate the fact that all these announcers who I think are very good on the CBS broadcast, I think are at their A game during the Masters. And I think a piece of it is that they're pressured not to overtalk and not overanalyze and not have to fill every single second the whole time. It's amazing how just that little tweak and that little maybe just onus on, hey, this is how the Masters wants it. We know CBS in some sense is pressured a little in terms of how they present the broadcast. I think it just comes across wonderfully. I love it. And I wish other sports productions would take a cue and try to take as many elements as possible from how the Masters is presented to us.
Yeah, the bird noises I could, you know.
I like the bird noises.
You like the bird noises?
I'm okay with the bird noises on a cloudy Rochester afternoon. Yes.
Brad Koziol, your host of Tee to Green and the Buffalo Sabres Radio Network. Brian, forgive me, because like I'm kind of checked out a little bit on the Sabres. I didn't realize, oh my gosh, there's actually a game. And then I realized, oh my gosh, we're friends with Brian. Like, how were you able to manage, you know, giving the, you know, the intermission update and everything else that you got to do during the broadcast while this historic final is going on?
Yes, I very much appreciate the NHL and Tampa and Florida for playing 6 o'clock games on both Saturday and Sunday. I had two TVs going, and luckily they were road games. If they were home games, I'd be at the arena. It might have been even tougher to follow the Masters. But I had two TVs going, and yes, you know, doing intermissions while the Masters was on, I was doing my best to keep an eye on both. But yeah, the Sabres, unfortunately, this last road trip, whatever sort of maybe, you know, into the off season momentum or whatever they want to spin it as, the feel good about their game has kind of gone away. Three straight road games with three straight losses that have kind of looked like a lot of games that they've struggled this year, back to poor defensive zone awareness, back to turning over the puck, back to not helping out their goaltender, back to even taking penalties that are unnecessary. I don't know. I wonder if, you know, they have really, really done a good job and fronted themselves as saying, look, even though we're eliminated, we still are focusing on this. We're still focusing on that. We still want to finish strong. We still want to continue to play the right way. I commend them for doing this for the last month when they pretty much have been eliminated. I know officially it wasn't up until last week, but they obviously being in last were done. I thought they did a very good job continuing with that. I'm wondering if it's just they are also maybe in the same boat you guys are of kind of like, all right, this is it. Let's get this season done here so we can hit the reset button and maybe start to think about next year and maybe what could be.
Yeah, well, what benefit do you have to win now? In fact, you benefit more to lose out because your chances at the number one overall get better and better, don't they?
For sure. And they could finish anywhere between fourth last and eighth last. There's a little bit of a swing here at the end. So for those that care about draft lottery odds, them losing out here could help in that sense. I think Lindy Ruff has said that by how he's constructed the lineup and by how he's gone in net with James Reimer, that he values the winning more so than anything. And look, if it means we're picking sixth instead of fifth, but if this establishes some of these young guys to learn how to play the right way and win, I'm going to do it. Even if it means I've got less of an answer on Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, he keeps playing James Reimer,
yeah,
who, of course, right now is giving them the better chance to win. I'm a little surprised in the sense that you still wouldn't want to learn more about Luukkonen, but I think Lindy says, look, in the end here, it's a better gain for our organization that these young guys learn how to play the right way and learn how to win, and they're going to do it in front of a goaltender right now that gives them the better chance. And I think, you know, that's why they're playing a 37-year-old in net 3 out of every 4 nights or 4 out of every 5 nights, which, again, I don't know what that does for Luukkonen's future. Maybe they've already, you know, inside house have thought, look at Levi's going to be our guy next year. They just gave an extension to Luukkonen last year, but Lindy has gone his messaging and what he's done with the lineup. He has basically said, we're going all in on winning and learning how to play the right way here, no matter what it does in the standings here over this final month to try to maybe establish something for next year.
Brian, I got one more hockey question for you because Amerik's related. We're excited about another Calder Cup run here. What are the odds we'll get Yuri Kulik back in Rochester for the run, Brian?
Yep, he's eligible. Smart move by Kevin Adams to do the paper transaction so that he's there. I would send him down. Yuri Kulik playing in the postseason in a high-pressure spot, obviously going from the top line with the Sabres, and he's playing with Tage Thompson. Like, he could come down there and hopefully have a dominating playoff. There's no negative to me. Unless he's dealing with something physically that they don't want him to be pushed through a playoff run, I would 100% do it. I would say I would think that there's so much more benefit than there is negative that I think the decision's a no-brainer. I would send him down. You want Devon Levi to have a long run. You want your younger players and prospects to have a long run. Even some alternative reasons. The more scouts and other teams see your prospects play in higher pressure situations, it also just intrinsically moves their value up if you want to trade one of them in a trade in something in the offseason. So I really don't see a reason why he shouldn't. I think organizationally, who still, even though the Amerks obviously have had better winning success than the Sabres had, I still think the organization as a whole, anything you can do to establishing a winning culture here, I know this sounds super cliche, I think you do it. And that means definitely allowing Kulik to play for the Amerks in the playoffs.
Man, that is music to our ears, Brian, because we're over here on pins and needles thinking, yeah, he played all season with the Sabres. They're probably going to say, he's played enough hockey.
We want to look at Konsta Hellenius on the, you know, like the minutes should go somewhere else. It's about development. No, winning is development. Brian, one last one for me. Looking ahead to the PGA Championship, Quail Hollow. What can you tell us about this course? Looking forward to May here.
Yeah, it's a spot that they normally play on the PGA Tour. It's a regular tour stop, and Rory McIlroy's had success there. So I got to think that he's going to have the headlights and the favorite label put on him going into this event. Just a long, classic layout where you got to hit it a mile to do well. Well, guess what? That sets up super well for Rory. So I got to think that this win yesterday has got to let him play a little bit more freely with a lot less pressure on him. He doesn't have to get asked now every time at a major, well, what about your major streak? It's been 11 years. Well, he doesn't have to answer to any of that anymore. The fact that he got the major slump done and he got the Grand Slam, kind of like got to be double freeing for him. I'm sure a lot of that emotion that we saw at the end yesterday was just the buildup of this last 11 years of constantly going into every major. And Rory, unlike a lot of other players that have had these droughts, like Spieth's had a drought, but Spieth also has not been sharp with his game. Jason Day's had a drought. You know, you could argue a handful of guys here that have been there, gone away, come back here. Rory has been a consistent player through this drought here of 11 years. He's been a top three player the entire time. He wins multiple times every year. He's been player of the year on the European Tour. He's been PGA Tour player of the year. He's been a FedEx Cup champion. So it's not like his game has been poor during this drought. He's just found ways to not win in the four most important tournaments of the year. And I'm sure it bothered him quite a bit. I got to think he's going to play freely. I think Rory goes on and has a really, really, really good rest of the year because of this. I wouldn't be surprised. In fact, if I was going to say put money on one side or the other with three majors left, I'd put money that he wins at least one more major this year.
Amazing. Brian, great having you on with us. Thanks for being our tour guide for this year's Masters, both last week and here after Rory secures the career Grand Slam. We'll be listening for Tee to Green on WGR Saturday mornings, correct?
Saturday from 7 to 8 every week. Yep. Looking forward to it. Hope everybody can listen in on WGR or on the Odyssey app. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks, Brian.
You got it. Brian Koziel, host of Tee to Green. You can hear him on the Buffalo Sabres radio network as well. Always great with this time to join us here and talk golf in the sports bar.
Yeah, it's in a good spot, the sport, coming out of that.
Yeah, but man, I would love the other majors to take a page out of what the Masters does as far as their presentation is concerned. I know never happen because they make money, but...
the Open, that's a whole different ballgame, right? So... would the PGA do that? They make a lot of money. U.S. Open, USGA, they make a lot of money. No, they're not going to do that. Now, the idea like, okay, no cell phones. Let's make sure that everybody there is engaged.
I kind of dig it.
The thing is, like, correct me if I'm wrong. Like, more often than not, it's tough to get a signal anyways. I'm like, whenever we were over there at Oak Hill, okay, we had not enough bandwidth. No.
Yeah.
Like, you're there to take pictures. That's the one thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tough to get bandwidth when you're around that many people. But I actually kind of dig it. I mean, if you want to be there to take pictures and stuff, do they allow cell phones for the practice rounds? I think they do, right?
I don't think they do.
No?
No.
No. I'm all for it. I mean, just using our experience, recent memory of the PGA Championship was here. I snapped a couple of shots of different things when I was there. But, man, I would have been just as fine just walking around, following a golfer, watching their game play out, taking in the course. And when you're there, when you're at Augusta, much better to view it through your two eyes than the lens of your camera phone. I just think that would be – I'd be fine with doing that at any major. If the majors decided no cell phones, hard thing for them to police and a hard thing for them to say to their fans, yeah, no, you can't have your cell phone anymore. The Masters has always just been different, and it's a shame that other majors and other golf tournaments can't adopt some of the same philosophies that the Masters have that have made them great.
Yeah, and as far as, all right, could you get a network to agree to the limited inventory? Maybe we just think differently. Maybe it's not a network. Maybe it's a YouTube, a Netflix, whatever it would be. But, Danger, hard for me to kind of imagine somebody sacrificing all that money.
I agree. RJ Ochoa, blogging the boys, covering the Dallas Cowboys for SB Nation, will join us here in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll also get his take on the Masters. We know he was watching along as well, like you were, like I was, like Gino was. We've got time for your calls at 866-4FAN if you want to pull up a stool and join us. And let's give away a free pair of tickets right now to see Breaking Benjamin along with 3 Days Grace September 17th at Darien Lake Amphitheater, courtesy of Live Nation. If you're caller 5, 866-4FAN is the phone number, 866-4326. Tickets on sale now at livenation.com for Breaking Benjamin and 3 Days Grace. A free pair of tickets for you now if you're 866, caller 5 at 866-4FAN, 866-4326.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester.